This episode is brought to you by Amber Wave, Sweaty Betty, and Storyworth. We're happy to have them on board, making this show a possibility.
Welcome to If These Ovaries Could Talk. I'm Jamie.
I'm Robin.
And we're your hosts.
Be sure.
I am a lesbian.
So gay.
We need to tell our story.
It's not your nuclear family anymore. It's not just your mom and dad thing.
We're not ruining these little humans.
Not for the gay reason. Just
because. Oh my God.
Listen, we're not going to talk too much about politics, no. But I just want to say I can't stop wooing. I couldn't stop wooing.
We had to get outside right away and like just to like scream with people on the street.
Whoa!
Yeah.
Oh my Woo! God. That's all right.
So we don't have to do, everybody is politics out.
Everyone's, oh my God, so much.
We all need to sleep for like 20 hours. Okay.
But speaking of voting, Jamie.
Speaking of, it's not politics. It's voting for your ovaries, which you all wanted, our ovaries, I should say. So
yes.
Our book is up for an Alternative Choice Awards
yes.
in the nonfiction category.
Isn't that so exciting?
It is super exciting. And so what we need all of you to do, this is your call to action, friends. You
yes.
need to go to our Instagram,
Insta.
Link in bio, and vote for our book. Vote
yeah,
for
you're gonna
our
see
book.
Like a little link in there for the Alternative Choice Awards, and then you just vote for us there.
Guys, you have to vote for us.
Yeah, we have to win.
Want to win so
also,
bad.
Also, P.S., by the way, Richie Jackson, former mm-hmm. episode Gay Like Me, his memoir is in the memoir category. So vote for us and Richie Jackson.
Go in there and vote for them. And if you've read any of these other This is all LGBTQ books, and there are
yeah.
so many. I have to go through the list and like start
so
reading
many.
Them. I had no idea there were so many. So go
yeah.
look at all these books, vote for the ones you know, pick up a couple you haven't read, and
like
definitely-
Like ours, if you haven't read it yet.
Well, you better have our book already. But, and then, and vote for our ovaries. Vote for our ovaries. Vote
yeah,
for
and don't
ovaries.
Forget, you can get our book at all major retailers, and there's this, we've been talking about this really cool bundle that you can get at Amazon. You can get the Kindle version and the audiobook version for just like, it's like, I think it's like $15 total together.
Yeah, it's
or
a $16 good deal.
Bucks total together. And then when you like, when you're reading on the Kindle and then like you say you get off the subway, you can, it'll switch to the audiobook version while you're walking around
right,
the city.
Right
it's like
from
amazing.
Where you left off. It's
yeah.
really, it's really
it
smart.
It like toggles back and forth seamlessly between the two. So go do that.
Fantastic. And so our ovaries will be in your ears and in your brain all the time. Just what
oh
you want.
Oh God. Do we have ovaries in the brain? Seems weird. That's weird. Let's thank
know.
Our newest Patreon member, Catherine Paris.
We can't say that wrong. That's,
no, we can't. But
oh,
you
wow.
know what, Jamie, though? Here's the thing. Catherine Paris knows that we stink at names
oh,
so much
my God.
That she was like, I'm not going to give you my French last name because you just can't do it.
That's
so I'll just give you my middle name.
That
yeah, like
really
she was like, you can't handle it.
That's so embarrassing. I have really close French friends now, too, because my daughter's best friend, their family's from Paris. And so they know that too about me. They even like will point to places on the map. This is how I am a dumb American. They will point to places on the map and be like, where is this? And I'm like,
oh, jeez.
Oh, God. I got to do better with my geography.
Well, we love Catherine Paris for supporting us and for knowing what idiots we are and making our life easier.
We're trying.
Thank you. And
We're
thank
trying.
You for joining our Patreon community. Where and anyone who else who wants to join, we would love to have you because you guys, anyone who's there is helping us make this show. Like,
yeah.
that's it.
Yeah.
You know, and you're going to get bonus content there. Like, the video interviews of most of the episodes, they drop a day before
so you
the
get
podcast.
Them early, guys.
Yeah, a day before the podcast comes out, you get the full unedited interview with our guests.
So you have a boring, lazy Sunday. What better to do than listen to our episode one day early?
And generally, we shower for those.
Yeah, because a lot of times we have a recording that day too. So we
yeah.
actually even look okay.
So should we talk about our guests for today, Jamie?
We should. Oh, these ladies, I mm-hmm. love them. Okay, Emily Vanderwerf and Libby Hill. They are writers and creatives and they are amazing women. I fell in love with them. This
mm-hmm.
this conversation
love.
Went to some really deep and
deep.
Beautiful places. And the
yeah.
way these two explain things and describe, because they're writers, it's so visual. They had so many visual. You have to just listen. You have to hear this episode.
Yeah.
The way they talk is beautiful. I love them.
Helen, we're going to play it for them.
She's like, stop
okay.
talking about beauty.
Yeah.
That was good.
Is that beautiful? Is that beautiful? It's just an interview. Let's get to Emily and Libby,
oh
shall we?
Oh, my God. Okay.
Roll it, Helen.
Helen, roll the tape. Roll. Helen, press the button.
Now she's striking. It's fine.
I'll press it.
Hi, Emily and Libby.
Hi, you guys.
Hello.
Hi.
Thank you.
Welcome to our ovaries.
Yes, thank you so much for being on our ovaries. Same mind, Robin.
How are you guys?
You know, I'm doing well. This is Emily, by the way. It's actually starting to cool down in LA, so that's nice.
Oh. My parents in South Dakota keep sending photos of like waking up with like an inch of snow on the ground, is horrifying. Already? And I'm like, oh, it's 72 here today. And then they block me for 48 hours. But we get through it. Yeah. We fight through it. It's fine.
Don't do that to your East Coast friends, man. It hurts. It hurts.
Let's do a 30-second elevator pitch about you two. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Em, are you ready?
I'm going to lead off and then you can take over.
Oh, okay. We'll see.
That's Do you want to lead off?
No, you should drive.
This is marriage right here.
Yeah, it is. There it is.
Okay. Ready, set, okay. Go.
So we are both writers. We both cover television. And in 2018, I came out to Libby as a trans woman, and she was there every step of the way through my transition. And throughout the whole deal, we had to navigate different changing statuses in our relationship beyond just suddenly the world saw us as a lesbian couple. Libby, what's up?
Oh, Emily forgot our entire backstory, which is we met when we were 18 and we got married when we were 22 and we moved to California when we were 25. And 2 weeks after she told me she was a woman, we had our first IVF attempt. Yeah, wasn't that everything, babe? I think that hit all the high notes, right?
That sounds like everything. I was born in Michigan in 1990.
No one cares about that.
Everybody cares. Well, we care about it all. You guys covered some ground there. That was good. That was well done.
We know how to tell our life story in a brief amount
of
time.
This is what happens when you're together for 20 years.
And two writers.
Well, yeah, maybe.
Right.
We haven't had anybody tag team the elevator pitch in a while, so I appreciate that.
That was good. Yeah. That was well done.
Well, that's the thing, is that neither of us are able to tell a complete story. So we're actually writing partners by necessity, not by choice.
Well, let's dig in, shall we? Let's start. I mean, let's start with your relationship and
the very beginning.
Right. Jamie's a theater person. So there you have that. Yes. let's start
one
with the beginning.
One of us.
Yeah.
One of us.
Yes. Yes, let's start at the beginning of your relationship. You were young.
Yeah. There's three different stories.
There's probably way more now.
Yeah, there's so many more. But I'm going to start with the approved one for public consumption, which is that Libby and I had a mutual friend named Kate. And I once took Kate to the prom. And on the way there, I asked her, who's the funniest person you know, expecting her to say me. And instead, she said Libby. And I was furious. I was absolutely furious that anyone other than me could be the funniest.
Who is this Libby?
Yeah, Libby, please weigh in on this.
Yeah, she's still actually furious that I'm funnier than her. So it's something we're working through. It's a lot of time, a lot of therapy. But Kate is still my best friend, one of those soulmate friends that you can pick up with after 6 years and continue the whatever conversation you were having. And she was always talking so wonderfully about Emily, about this girl that she knew who always got into these wacky adventures and just seemed really kind, seemed to really value interesting women, value smart women, I just had a sense in that weird like 16, 17 year old way that like if I could meet this person, this would be a person who got me, which was ridiculous because I didn't know anything about them.
That is amazing.
Well, it's a wavelength stuff. And I liked that she played the piano and I didn't play the piano. And it's weird telling the story. I don't know if we've told this story from this point of view yet, babe. So it's kind of weird to reframe it.
Do you know that my wife and I met in a very similar way? Somebody was talking about the two of us to each other.
Oh, yeah.
And I hadn't even met her. And I was so nervous when she came off the elevator. And I was like, oh, I just knew she was going to be someone important to me. And she was with someone else. And
yeah.
But he kept being like, oh, you two are so perfect together. Too bad she's never going to leave her wife. And I was just like, what's happening? So it's like so interesting to hear you say that way. I've never heard anyone else say that.
Yeah.
Well, it's also weird because when I was 16 and 17, I was obsessed with boys. That's who I thought Emily was. And
we all
did,
honestly.
Well, no, I know. I know. And so it was even more this like idea of her that I had built. And yet that idea that I had built was not wrong. It's just that I wouldn't actually be able to see that person until, you know, a couple of years ago. Wow. So, like, good going, gut.
All right, Robin, you ready to record?
I am ready. I got my Ember Wave on. I'm ready to go in case I get too hot. You know, Jamie, the temperature is personal and everyone's idea of comfortable is unique. And this room of mine is way too hot for me. And these windows are closed. It is way too hot.
Okay, Robin, push the button, please. Push the button.
Pushed.
Please. Okay, good. You really are really ridiculous.
I know.
But you're right. Most public places heat or cool spaces aiming for a temperature, Robin, that is comfortable for, listen to this, only 80% of the population, leaving so many people too hot or too cold, like yourself.
Too hot.
And it is proven that not feeling thermally comfortable can contribute to lost productivity, increased stress levels, and it can also be mentally exhausting for the people near you.
I know. Tell me about it, Jamie. And that's why I love my Ember Wave. It is there for me when I need relief most, like right now.
Yes.
All I do is I press to activate my Ember Wave, and it creates a cool or a warm sensation on my wrist. And then that sensation works with my body temperature, my mind, to make me feel more comfortable in just a matter of minutes.
Are you feeling better, Robin?
I am. Thank you.
You're welcome.
It is happening right now. And it's based on science of how we respond to temporal sensations.
Temperature, too.
Oh, okay. Or temporal. I like to made up words. And here, this is what I like about it, is it was invented by three MIT scientists. Ember Wave even has a fall asleep mode, Jamie, that can help you maintain a comfortable temperature as you fall asleep.
I know. You use that, too.
You do. I do.
I love the Ember Wave, too. And guess what, guys? Right now, Ember Wave is offering our listeners $50 off when you go to emberwave.com/OCT.
That is emberwave.com/OCT.
EmberWave.com/OCT. You better go get that.
Get cool.
You said something that I want to come back to. You said it's weird, and I think you kind of just answered it, but it's weird talking about this from, I think you said this point of view or from this place.
Framed it.
Is that why? Because of how long it took you to get to the place where you're at now? Is that why that's weird?
It's bizarre. I've been unpacking some stuff here in our office and finding a bunch of our wedding photos and just being like, what do we do with these? Because like, if I were to tell you a story about when I was 5 years old, I would say when I was a little girl, because that just feels so natural. You know, like I have written girl me into like basically all of my memories. And I know that Libby has remarked that she has done that to some degree too. You know, like it's not a thing that happened smoothly and readily, but like increasingly the longer I spend as Emily and the more I make sense as Emily, like the harder it is to remember me as my old self. So it is this sort of weird thing where we have to be revising the past while acknowledging that like at the time we had no idea what was happening. But anyway, that the rest of the story is that Libby and I met the first day of college. We had met several times before, but the first day of college, she came over to my dorm room and we hung out. She watched me play a dumb car racing video game. And within a couple of days, people were like, so how long have you two been dating? And we weren't dating at the time at all.
Like that weekend, we went to a nearby big town and we went out on a not date. We just went out to like the mall and out to eat and watch a movie. And like, while we were there, because South Dakota's tiny, I ran into like one of the families from my hometown. And so then they met Emily. And then later in that weekend, we went to the state fair and saw a bunch of my family there and they met Emily. And I met Emily's parents the first day of college. Like it was.
You're basically like a typical lesbian couple. You did the U-Haul thing.
We literally did. We were sending each other like, we should just get married so we can live in married people housing. Like, we just had no idea we were lesbians yet. Like, so everyone thought we were crazy. But Emily was still resisting her queerness, except it was head. It was
herself.
Yeah, so herself. And so was I. And so it was a whole, it all got inverted. So.
You were ignoring it a lot less than I was, I would say. But
when did you first know, Emily, that you were like, I'm going to have to make a change? Well, not make a change, address who you really are.
Complicated. I said that wrong. complicated.
Yeah.
I don't know the correct answer to that question because I think that I said something about it when I was a tiny child. And this was, you know, the 80s in South Dakota. So I was very quickly disabused of that notion. Mm-hmm. And then I just kind of set it aside. I put it away. I decided that it was not for me, that I was not going to be able to have that kind of life. But again, tiny child, I had no idea. So it was just buried in the back of my brain. Like there are all these times in my adolescence when I would like just undertake, like my best friend for most of teenage life was a girl, like, and we had a very traditional teenage girl best friend's relationship without either of us realizing that was going on. And that was like a very powerful thing for me. But yeah, I figured out something was up in regender 2 months before Libby and my wedding. I stumbled upon a website full of stories about men being magically transformed into women. And whatever door I'd put all this behind in my brain just kind of like cracked open.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, I need to look at this. And I was like, no, it's fine. It's fine. It's fine. And like, I slammed it back shut. But of course, this happens with this, like a little bit of it got caught in the door and then the door was never closed again. And it just kept opening a little bit wider and a little bit wider and a little bit wider. And then 15 years later is when
I finally came out. What a wonderful way to put that.
Beautifully said.
Yeah. The door part is really, that's such a great image because it's like, I think a lot of people go through that with sexuality too. Like, I'm not going to deal with this. I'm not going to deal with this. But the idea that something's like stuck in the door and it can't be closed, that's a great image.
I find myself in this position of speaking to a lot of trans women who are in the position I was in when I came out, which is they're in their 30s. They are married. They don't yet have kids. They're talking about having kids. They're thinking about having kids. They're not sure their wives are going to accept them if they come out. And I'm always like, listen, you can shut the door on this for a while. You can't shut the door on it forever. And it's going to get so much harder and so much worse once kids are involved because that complicates things immeasurably. Now, I have had like, I've talking to these women, like so many of them have stayed with their wives. Their wives have been like, you know, I'm more bi than I thought I was, or it's like, we can work something out. You know, if they do split up, their wives love them and they have a good marriage, so they become like friends, and then, you know, their now ex-wife is like helping them deal with fashion and jewelry and things like that that they've never had to really think about. The important thing here is you can't shut this down forever. You know, I made it 15 years and God, I wish I had just come out the day I found that site with the stories, but I had a lot of learning I had to do. And the entire 2010s were like just me inching closer and closer to coming out and then backing off and being like, I can't do that. It would be too much for Libby. And always like making like Libby's happiness the center of it. I think because that feels better. That feels more like you're taking a stand, like you're making a sacrifice. And that feels like a better, more humble action to undertake. Then, you know, just being like, I'm really fucking scared.
In the meantime, right. She was making me miserable.
Right. I was wondering, Libby, how you were, if you were picking up on this and how you were feeling.
Yeah. Tell us about that.
Oh, yeah. Like the last couple of years have in a big way been a huge relief for me because so much of Emily and my relationship was like I was existing in a mystery novel that was just ongoing. And I like the shoe never dropped. Like I was just trapped in this universe that didn't quite make sense. It was just like 15 degrees off. I had met this person. And then the summer before our wedding, they went away, like physically, they went across the state to work. And when they came back for our wedding, like it was still good, but something had changed. They felt further away. And that sort of continued, that sort of weird disconnect, that distance. And I assumed it was because we got married. I assumed it was because things change. And it just stayed. And it really broke a lot of things in our relationship. And that's not a singular blame thing. I have suffered from depression since childhood. And that has been a huge difficulty in our relationship. There's a lot of other factors. But while Emily it was good for her to be concerned, because in 2003 or 2008 or 2012, even, I don't know how I would have reacted to her coming out. I probably would have freaked out. What happened was, the way a lot of things happen in life, one thing started changing and it led to something else being ready to change. And I remember it was shortly after the election in 2016. I had a huge falling out with a friend. Mm. Huge argument. I totally blew up our friendship. And I tried to apologize. She wouldn't accept it, which is totally her right. And I was like, well, I got to go back to therapy. And I got to find someone who can help me, because it's time. And I can't live like this any longer. And so I worked with that therapist for like 18 months. And I made leaps and bounds and improvements in my depression. And I was able to deal with my emotions. I was able to deal with my depression. I was able to deal with myself in such a place that I do believe that Emily and I got to a place in our relationship where she felt safe enough and secure enough to start dealing with her own shit, because she didn't have to. She didn't have to, and she couldn't, in a certain capacity, put off all of her concerns on me.
Right.
She sort of had to start dealing with her own stuff, because I didn't need her to take care of that for me anymore. For the last 2 years, it's such a relief, because Emily is the person that I always knew her to be. She was always the person that I had seen, that I had spent time with early in our relationship, that I knew that she was. It's just a huge relief, honestly.
You're living in your reality now.
Yeah.
I want to ask, because Libby, you spoke of like a chasm that formed right before your wedding after Emily came back from across the state or across the country. Emily, do you have any recollection of that? Did you feel that as well?
So the day after I found the website with all the stories on it, I had downloaded Netscape Navigator to look at these sites, which was a browser I didn't normally use. And I forgot to uninstall it. And Libby and I basically lived together. So she came out and like saw that there was this new browser installed, and of course opened it and was like, what's going on? And then like the entire history, it was like sites of stories about men turning into women. And I woke up and came out, and she had this like very sad expression on her face. I wouldn't say like an unsupportive expression. She just was very sad. And she was like, do you want to be a woman? And it was like, I had never, ever, ever considered that that was like a thing that could possibly ever happen. And so I said, no, of course not. Because what was the other answer to that? Again, this is 2003. Right. I had no clue trans people existed. I lived in South Dakota. I had read occasional stories about like a man who had a sex change operation. That was how it was always framed. This man,
yep.
Now mm-hmm. Woman, because he had a sex change operation. And like, I read those stories with great interest, but it was just never, you know, I didn't imagine it being a thing that was possible for me. And like, at the time, therapy existed. At the time, a number of the things that we take for granted now existed, but there was like no education about it anywhere. The handful mm-hmm. of sites that were dealing with that were full of trans women who were extremely gatekeepy, who were like, well, if you didn't have this feeling since you were 4 years old, you're probably not really trans, sort of that thing. And it just, you know, by the time I had a sense that like this was a thing that people could do, I was in my early 30s, and I just was like, well, it's too late for me. You know, if this was 10 years earlier, yes. Like if Libby had found that in 2013 and asked me, do you want to be a woman? I would have said, yes, of course. But now, you know, I'm 32, 33, 34. There's no way I can do it. And the thing is, I always knew that if I came out to Libby, even when, you know, she's sort of talking about these times when it wouldn't have been, our marriage wouldn't have survived, I know that our friendship would have eventually in some form. And that was always like a comfort to me, because I knew I wanted Libby in my life. But this was all stuff that was going on behind the scenes. I wasn't consciously thinking about it. I was throwing myself into work and eating really poorly and just sort of like trying to not be alive. Even though like I didn't want to act, I didn't actively want to die. I just wanted to not exist. You know, I remember about a month before I came out, Libby and I were on a trip, and I told her, I think I was reincarnated wrong. And like that was my working theory for what was going on. Cause I was like, Obviously, I'm a man. We all know I'm a man, but like there's this really persistent, really strong girl's voice in my brain that feels really real. And then I realized, okay, yeah, you're just a facsimile of what you thought your parents wanted when you were a kid. Now, what are you going to do? So
what's interesting to me is like at this time you have depression going on. You're in the middle of trying to figure yourself out, Emily. And in the middle of that, you were like IVF. Were you, was that also more of like following a path that you felt you were supposed to do?
Oh,
or was it you deeply wanted
Livy
children?
We will have a lot to say about this. I think that we both wanted children for most of our marriage. And then we got to the point where we were like, we can't just have children naturally. And we were like, wait, do we want children? So Livy, I'm going to let you take that away because you have more to say about this topic.
And for Emily, the answer was yes. Like Emily's always been a yes. And there are a lot of reasons for that. I think Emily would be an amazing mother. And I've always known that. Also, Emily is adopted and she has some issues that have arisen from that that make having her own family very important to her. But it's so interesting that you asked that about IVF, if that was about following a plan, because a lot of the last 5 years of my life have been coming to terms with my life not being what I thought it was going to be or what I thought it should be. Again, South Dakota, like I came from a town of 2,000 people. Everyone I graduated with owns a home, has three kids, and most of them are in high school right now. They have a life and they have always had this life. And that was the life that I thought I was supposed to have. An offset of the depression is that I never really had plans for my future. I never had dreams for my future. So I just sort of slotted in these like prefab plans for my future, let's call them. The idea that maybe I wasn't going to get those things, there's reconciling with those things. But what I found more difficult is reconciling with the idea of what if I don't want a baby? What if I'm the kind of person that doesn't want a baby? Like, who am I if this one thing that I'd always been certain that I was, suddenly I am not? And I've had a lot of medical poking and prodding with all of my inherent reproductive organs. They just don't cooperate and occasionally try and kill me, which is fine. Like, whatever, that's their prerogative.
I don't think they should try to kill you.
I don't either, but like, I'm not going to take their agency from them. Like, I don't feel comfortable with that. But to say, it goes without saying that they have not been cooperative as far as the reproductive front went. So we were pursuing that because it was the thing we wanted when we thought we knew what our life was and what our life was going to be. And I realized, like, not only was I not sure that I definitely, definitely wanted kids, because that's not something you can opt out of once you've committed to it.
Even if you want to.
And trust me, we want to sometimes.
We do sometimes.
Exactly. and I'm totally aware of that. And I'm totally aware of what the things inside of me that may make me more likely to want to opt out. I have separate challenges. But then the idea that I would have to take on this full-time job just to achieve something that so many people are able to do naturally before then taking on this full-time job for the rest of my life of being a parent. I don't know. Like, it would have been one thing if we could have just gotten pregnant.
Right.
And then we have a baby, but to put the time and the effort and the emotional heartache into going above and beyond to do this thing that I wasn't necessarily 100% committed to. It was a lot to wrap my head around. And then M came out and then it was like, all right, we have these frozen embryos. Let's put those in the freezer and figure out our lives and circle back to the frozen embryos. We'll see what happens.
I, for one, found it incredibly ironic that about 2 weeks after I came out to my wife, she started hormone treatments.
Yeah, that was great. I didn't enjoy estrogen as much as you do.
I have found estrogen really great.
Oh, Robin, I'm so bummed that I don't get to see my family this Thanksgiving, like my extended family. I love me some Thanksgiving. I really do. It is my favorite.
I know. It's going to be challenging this year. I mean, we're not doing our usual big meal with friends. And, you know, it's a bummer. But that doesn't mean we can't feel close. You know, you should give your family the gift of StoryWorth. It's a great way to share stories and preserve memories.
Oh, I love StoryWorth. I gave it to my mom last Christmas, remember?
I do.
I love the different questions they send. It is a great way to preserve family memories. Maybe I'll give it to my brother this year. He's got a lot of crazy stories. I mean, he's basically crazy, so.
Yeah. And for those of you guys at home who are getting ready to have holidays without family like we are, StoryWorth's an online service that helps your loved ones share stories through thought-provoking questions about their memories and personal thoughts. It's just a fun new way to engage with family, especially those that you can't see in person.
Yeah, it's really cool. So this is how it works. Every week, StoryWorth emails your family member different story prompts. Mm-hmm. And it's like questions that you don't really ever think to ask, like, how has your life turned out differently than you imagined it would, which can get deep. Mm-hmm. Have you pulled any great pranks? Mm-hmm. There's some really fun ones.
Yeah.
Reading the weekly stories is really fun, and it makes your family feel close even when you're not together. I know this because it's happened. I've already used it. I learned that my mom won a boxing match with the neighborhood bully when she was little. That was cool. Badass mama Sue.
And here's what I love about it. After 1 year, StoryWorth will compile all your stories, including pictures, into a beautiful keepsake book that's shipped to you for free.
It's great because you can keep it for your kids and they're going to have the memories forever. Mm-hmm. I really wish I had gotten this for my dad before he passed, because as time goes by, the stories get less and less accurate. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like I don't remember them like he did.
I do. So guys, give your loved one the gift of spending time together wherever you live with StoryWorth. Get started right away with no shipping required by going to StoryWorth.com/OCT, and you're going to get $10 off your first purchase.
That is a great plan. That's StoryWorth.com/OCT for $10 off. My full-time job, you said, Libby, do I really want to do this full-time job, this above and beyond to create, to get pregnant when I'm not even sure I want it? Did you mean like fertility treatments and having to go through the rigmarole of getting pregnant?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. I just wanted to clarify that.
No, for sure. Like the doctor's appointments, the checking my uterine linings and the transvaginal ultrasound, which Emily was very disappointed was not what it sounded like. But yeah, it was a lot. It was a lot of money. And the thing was, because of my killer insides, some of the things that we would do would upset them, and they would, in turn, try to kill me. So I think I was hospitalized then. That was the big thing, is that I had to be hospitalized about 3 months after Emily came out to me, and about 2 months after our first IVF treatment, because the fallopian tubes strike back, and so I had to get emergency antibiotics and all of that stuff. And when we came out of that, I was just like, I gotta take a break. Like, I can't keep doing this indefinitely.
But you had already gone through the IVF retrieval. You had the embryos.
Yeah. We had the eggs. Em had done her part. We have 8 embryos left in the freezer, and so that was the other thing about when Emily came out, is like, we were so far ahead of the game on a certain level because we had these embryos. There was nothing as far as that went really to prevent Emily from going on hormones immediately, because we always knew that our reproductive journey was going to have to be medically assisted.
That's interesting.
We had a lot of shortcuts on our side in a lot of ways. It's the same thing with me being queer. Like, I had never identified as queer, because when you're 18 and when you're with the same person from when you're 18, there's no real experimentation and there's no recognition of that. So I had known I was probably bi, but it felt bandwagon-y to like really make a stand on it when I had only been with Emily back then. When I had only been with Emily's alter ego all those years, let's say.
Well, because from an outward appearances, you were in a heteronormative relationship.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So my favorite part of everything is the day that Emily came out to the world in her essay. in June of last year, I just kind of quote tweeted it, and I don't even remember what I said. Do you remember what I said?
Some personal news. I'm bisexual.
Yeah, right. I guess I'm bisexual.
Oh, that's good.
So we were ahead of the game mm-hmm. on some level.
So you just, I'm making the assumption you just paused.
Oh, yeah. I just couldn't, I didn't have the emotional wavelength to keep myself on track, keep Emily on track, and then also be trying to bring another life into the world. I just didn't think I could, I don't think we could service all of those things acceptably. So it got sidelined, and we're still circling around it. But yeah, there's still a lot going on. I don't want to do IVF in a pandemic. I don't want to have a baby in quarantine, but yeah, so that is, we have the luxury of putting a pause button on it because, you know, it's already so late anyway.
Are you guys on the same page with where you are right now? I mean, because it seems like all the other stuff it just seems like you two are, I don't know, am I putting words in your mouth, but always on the same page. It feels like it. I mean, maybe that's dicey, but you two seem so like answering each other's behalf.
I think they're always on the same page of talking through it, yeah. Perhaps.
We have had a lot of conversations about it. I don't know what's going to happen. How I, in an ideal world, I would have one kid, you know, I would like to have one kid and have a lot of feelings around child stuff, but I'm increasingly open to like adopting myself, you know, to surrogacy, to all manner of things that I think even 2 years ago were kind of off the table. Mm-hmm. But I think it's also possible that, you know, in an ideal world, my connection to Libby's importance to me, all of that is so, so important that ultimately I decide that that's more important to me than having kids. And that's where we end up. I don't think that we have made a firm decision one way or another. We're not yet 40. We have a little time to think about this, but also, you know, I think we're both aware that that time is ticking away and there will come a point when that's not possible, but we do have 8 frozen embryos, which is
a good number.
Yeah. We also are in this place where we're trying to launch a career as TV writers. So we're just doing like everything at once. I remember in 2018, I came out to Libby, we started IVF, and we had this pilot we'd written, like actually start to be in a place where it might get sold. We were doing all of those things at the same time. And it felt like our writers in the other universe where we're a TV show had just completely lost track of the story. And we're just like, you know what? We're just going to do a season where we throw stuff at the wall, see what sticks.
So. Like that third season of a TV show where things go off the rails.
Oh, yeah.
And you're kind of like, what happened? The first 2 seasons were so good.
I like season 5 or 6 of Scandal, where it's just like, and now
what is happening? Like,
really? Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
A lot of transitions. I think that that's probably true across the board with a lot of folks who transition. It's not just Emily. It's not just your transition. It's a million things have to transition in order for you to become the you that you know you are, but also for your relationship to become the relationship that, I don't know, am I making sense here?
One of the things that my therapist, who is a trans man, told me when I was, you know, really just starting therapy with him, and I was like, I don't know if I'm going to do HRT for several years, et cetera, et cetera. He was like, because I was very concerned about what my parents would say.
Fuck 'em.
And they reacted poorly, but by the time I told them that I've been on hormones for several months, so I didn't care. I was going to keep taking the magic pills. And he was like, that's just the thing. Every time someone transitions, all of their relationships transition. Right. Now, I'm thinking about, there's a woman who's a very good friend of mine, and we knew each other before I transitioned. We'd hung out a few times. And she was always like, you know, you seem like you're kind of cool. But also like there, it was clear that something was not quite there. And then the second I came out to her as trans, it was like, oh, okay, of course. And it just like clicked into place. And we've been really great friends ever since. And like, I had that happen with a number of people where my relationship just was instantly clarified. But the longer you've known someone, the closer you are to them, of course, it gets trickier and trickier. And like, you know, Libby and I navigated that really beautifully, I think. And I feel like we did it really well, but there were still really hard times when we had to be like, I don't know what this means. I don't know what to do with the 15 years before you came out when we were married, but apparently that person wasn't real, but we had no other information along those lines. We've had to struggle with, like, when you grow up in a place where gender roles are so prescribed, what do you do with the fact that, like, suddenly you're in a relationship where, in essence, you can create any gender roles you want. And then one partner, by which I mean myself, is very into traditionally feminine gender roles. Like, I like the domestic stuff. I like cooking. I like cleaning. I would carry the baby if I could. I would feel tremendously validated by that. You know, I like having long hair and doing my makeup and all that junk. Like, it was so liberating to realize that I wanted that, to realize that, like, my ironic love of Taylor Swift was actually because I wanted to, like, devour her life force and become her. But that's a thing that Libby has frequently sort of talked about, is like, we weren't sure how to redefine that relationship in a way that, like, made sense to both of us while also, like, preserving what was good about it that we wanted to keep. I'm going to let her talk about that before I start telling stories from her point of view.
Oh, I don't know why you stop now, sweetie.
If you could all see the look that Emily just gave Libby.
Yeah. I highly recommend someone have a partner transition, especially when you've been together for so long, because it's just, you don't have to hide anything anymore. It's everything can kind of be on the table. And, you know, you recognize it's not a betrayal, but it is a reckoning of some sort. So if you are going to move forward, everyone might as well lay their cards on the table, because that's the only way you're going to move forward. Mm. It's a lot like getting the opportunity to rebuild a house. You're tearing it down. It has good bones. But the thing that we have struggled with the most has nothing to do with the transition. It has nothing to do with how much we love each other. But it has to do with the kind of broken people we were when we were 18 years old, trying to establish a relationship that we then never left. So we did the teardown and the bones are good, but we had to figure out if the foundation was viable. And if there were places where it wasn't, then we needed to shore it up. And those were harrowing times, knowing that we had potentially built this life upon something that was not stable enough to move forward with was crushing. Mm. Now I think we're to the place where, you know, we're putting up sheetrock. We're in a pretty good place and we're still kind of building out the blueprints, but we're good and we're on the same page. And Emily allowed me to hire a contractor instead of doing it herself. So, you know, it's good. I think we're on the path.
That's beautifully said. Once again, you guys are writers. You can tell.
Oh, our therapists love us. We are just constantly doing bits.
Yeah.
It's awful.
I like how you don't negate each other, how you each give each other the space to say what is real for you, and then you turn it over and let the other person say what's real for them. And I just think that's a really wonderful tool as a couple. I mean, you can see you've done a lot of work.
Yeah, we have done a lot of work. I am not the active vehicle in Emily's transition. I am the active vehicle in how I respond to Emily's transition, but they are two different things.
We're very, like, I think very conscious of the ways that stories about cis people who are married to trans people who transition after the marriage are told. There's this weird thing in our culture where cis partners of trans people have a tremendous amount of societal clout. There have been so many New York Times columns about my ex transitioned and it broke up our marriage, or my ex transitioned and now we're good friends, but oh, it's kind of sad. There's this whole, like, narrative of grief around that, mm-hmm. that I don't want to say isn't real. There is grief when suddenly your partner's like, oh, I'm trans, but, like, making that the overriding experience has created these bad narratives. On the flip side, trans people don't have that sort of societal clout. Like, I kind of do, because I have a platform from which I can write and I can talk about these things, and people, you know, want to hear what I have to say for some godforsaken reason. But you know, most trans people who are in my situation don't have that kind of platform, whereas their spouse could like go, you know, to the Washington Post and be like, hey, I want to write about this. And the Washington Post would be like, how interesting. What a compelling story. Now, what trans people have, what we've built in that vacuum is really rich support systems, incredibly lovely support groups, Discords, Slacks, Twitter DMs, just places where we can be there for each other and take care of each other and help each other through these really difficult things. Because even when a marriage transitions through a gender transition beautifully, but the other side, as I think ours has, there's a lot of complicated stuff there that has to be dealt with on both sides. Cis partners of trans people don't have that. They don't have that support system. Libby has talked about that a lot, about like, what would that look like? How do you come up with a space where people can express their dark, negative emotions without negating the fact that the person they love more than anything in the world needs to do this to be a complete and whole person? And I think that is a problem that really needs to be solved. And, you know, if we're going to tell, one of the reasons that we agree to do stuff like this show is because we do want to present this as warts and all, but we also want to present it as we are each other's partner. We are each other's person. And that would have been true if we had gotten divorced because of my transition. It would be true if we get divorced in 10 years. You know, we are immensely important to each other. And the story of what happens right now is not as important as the story of who we are across all of those years. The smartest thing I ever read about marriage is in a book by Mary Doria Russell called The Sparrow, in which there's this, it's a science fiction novel. And a couple who've been married for 30 or 40 years, and the main character is a Jesuit priest, and they're on board a spaceship traveling to another star. And so he just like
sits, this is great. Yeah. I hope you never get to the point. No, I hope I you just describe the plot of this novel.
I love it.
Excuse me, Libby. And the priest sits down with the woman and the couple. They're very cis heteronormative. How boring for them. Says, you know, how does it work? How do you stay married? And she's like, that's just the trick of it. I haven't had one marriage. I've had three marriages. You know, we change. We become different people. And hopefully you're still compatible. But if you're not, that's okay. It doesn't negate the fact that it was a good marriage for a while. You get married, it's a gamble that you're going to be ready to be compatible with the person again. And like Libby and I feel like we've been through everything. We feel like we've been through enough, but there's still this thing where like, I might say, oh, I really want to have kids. And Libby might say, I really don't want to have kids. And like, we'll have to not be each other's spouse at that point. And that will be, I don't want to live in that world.
A divorce doesn't have to be a failure. The end of a relationship doesn't have to be a failure. It's just that it's an end. I think what I realized with Em's transition is that marriages, especially if they stretch on, they go through many transitions. They just aren't necessarily called transitions. Someone changes careers, someone goes back to school, or the fact is simply, I am not the same person I was 5 years ago. I'm not the same person I was 10 years ago. And none of those people were the people that Emily married. This is a little more substantial, I guess, but only from the outside, maybe. Like, yeah, there's a name change and there's a gender presentation change, but for the most part, it's just like, oh, look at my partner who's so much happier now. It doesn't have to be as big a deal as it feels like in the moment.
It's not much different from all the other changes that you're going through in your relationship.
Yeah, it's just, it's another thing, and you're gonna work through it or you're not gonna work through it, but either way, it doesn't mean you failed.
It's okay. You guys embody transition.
Yeah, it's not about Emily's transition. No. It is your transition as two people, as a couple, as like, it's just, it's all around you.
And I have like a video game image of my head of like breaking all the bricks around them and like breaking the norms, breaking the mold, and seeing that that's okay because something new forms and it's okay.
I mean, I am the most stereotypical and boring white lady in her 30s you could possibly imagine. But yes, I appreciate being a norm breaker who has a shirt that says, but first pumpkin spice, that she bought ironically, but is becoming less ironic with every passing day.
That's amazing.
It's like one of the first things I bought for her. And it's like, no, trust me. This is you.
This is you. Like,
Jamie, leggings used to be for the gym only, but now they're everyday apparel. We all need to step up our legging game with the best of the planet, Sweaty Betty. That's all I'm saying.
I mean, Robin, for you, it certainly has changed. They are literally all you wear right now.
Yeah, because they're comfy. And I mean, look at my butt. No, look how good my butt looks.
No, thank you. But
yeah, don't look at my butt.
You are right, because honestly, no other athletic brand can compete with the Sweaty Betty Power Leggings. Expertly placed seams and squat-tested compression fabric that physically give your booty instant peach emoji status. It's true. It's true. It's scientific. No joke about it. My squats look good in those pants. And I really do need to get some new pairs, because every time I go to work out, I get really upset if my Sweaty Bettys are dirty. That's how much I love them.
Well,
I want to wear them every time.
They're quick drying and they have a pocket equipped. And these leggings are high waist performers. Oh, and you can take their quiz at sweatybetty.com to find your perfect style and choose from a wide selection of strategically cut patterns.
Yeah, they're really cute. The Sweaty Betty Power Leggings, opaque fabric, adjustable drawstring waist, and back and side pockets make staying active look sexy as hell, like we like to do. From head to toe. And I particularly love them because the side pocket holds a phone perfectly on my runs. No joke. So like, and that can't be said for other brands I've tried to wear. A phone falling out of your pocket on a run is not fun. Not fun at all. And that never happens with my Sweaty Bettys.
Listen, I don't know much about that, Jamie, but I do know that I look sexy as hell cooking in these bad boys.
Okay, Robin. I know. Okay, but now through November 30th, you can get 20% off your entire purchase when you visit sweatybetty.com/OCT and enter code OCT at checkout. This is the best offer Sweaty Betty has available anywhere, guys.
Because you deserve to look amazing before, during, and after your workout. You're going to get 20% off your entire purchase at sweatybetty.com/OCT.
This is only until November 30th, spelled SweatyBetty.com/OCT, and enter code OCT at checkout. I'm going to go buy a couple more pairs.
Do it.
This is the thing I've been talking about with some other trans women, which is, before we come out, when we are living in cis male spaces, I'm putting air quotes around that. I just realized that this is not a video program, but I just put air quotes around cis male spaces. When we are living in those spaces, we often are sort of like shapeless blobs. You know, we're just kind of there. We're trying to take up as little space as possible. I remember when I read about the concept of man spreading, the idea that like men sort of slouch all over on the subway and take up more space than they should. I became and at the time I was about 100 pounds heavier because I was depressed and ate a lot. I just became very conscious of the space I took up and tried to make myself smaller and smaller because I wasn't one of those kind of men. You know, I was a good male ally or whatever. And the problem is like, the more you try not to take up space, the more you let other people define your own boundaries. The more you're like, well, my mom says I need to be like this, so I guess I'll do that. My partner says I need to be like this, so I guess I'll do that. And then you come out and in my case, when I started taking hormones was the most dramatic shift. But even immediately after I self-accepted and came out, I just suddenly had boundaries. I just was like, I want to do this. This is who I am. This is the person I am. This is what I want to do with my life. And then when I took hormones, it was like I went into overdrive.
When Emily started to have boundaries, like I lost my shit. Like I didn't know how to deal with that. What are boundaries and how dare you put them in place now? We've been living so long without them. I lived so long without them. How dare you have boundaries about things now? And it was there was some real shit we had to work through. And it was hard and it was painful. And it wasn't a problem that was caused by the transition. It was a problem that was solved by the transition out of necessity. But these are a lot of things that come to light. You know, when someone makes an active choice to better themselves, a lot of that unhealthy stuff gets rooted out for better or worse. That was a trip.
A lot of times when I talk to trans women who are married to cis women who intend to stay together, there is this real fear of like, there is a cloak of invisibility that comes with being straight in the United States of America. where you can walk down the sidewalk holding your partner's hand, or you can go to a grocery store with your partner and like people don't even give you a second look. And even in a state like California, which is extremely friendly to queer relationships, there is still this like, okay, how do we figure out, you know, the gender roles? How do we figure out, you know, going out in public? And a few years ago, there was a lesbian couple went to a famous deli here in Los Angeles and were refused service. And like, that can happen in Los Angeles? What? I remember in the wake of the 2016 election, I was like, I am just really scared for all my friends because I, as a white man, you know, I'm probably going to be fine. And then the day after I started taking hormones to transition, the Trump administration was like, we are going to crack down on trans identities. And I was like, if I wanted a bigger sign from the universe not to be doing this, that would be it. Mm. But so like being a going from a straight couple to a queer couple is terrifying. And the opposite is also true. I talked to a cis woman who was married to someone she perceived to be a cis woman who is a trans man. And now she's in a relationship that appears straight to the world. And it's like all of this stuff I associated with great pride with my queerness, where did that go? You know, it's this thing that so many trans women and cis women who decide to remain in a marriage together have to navigate and is also tricky. And you kind of would not expect it to be tricky because we believe we live in an era of, you know, increased LGBTQ acceptance, which we do, but you still have to like navigate the fact that we have that increased acceptance because for a long time there was none and we're still not like all the way there. And suddenly you find yourself in your mid 30s as an old, boring married couple having to like live through this reality that other people have been in for decades.
Yeah, I never thought of that. You haven't had to navigate the world as queer people. And now you are.
Yeah, I mean, like I was, I just didn't realize it.
Well, right.
Oh my God, you guys, this was so much.
This is and beautiful.
I know. And I mean that in the best possible way. Like this is, I feel like we all sat down and had a drink and just like leaned in. Like this was so lovely.
I came to tears a couple times hearing you guys talk about this. Now I've been moved. And it's going to be okay.
I just want to say that we have talked several times about divorce this episode, but hearing Libby speak so beautifully about all of this just reaffirms to me all the time why I love her and why I'm so committed to her and why I think
Emily's the best. Emily's my whole world.
I think not acknowledging it, that divorce is a possibility, doesn't mean it's less of a possibility. Mm-hmm. It just means you're not any couple who's married. It's a possibility. And I think the moment when you realize that can be frightening, but you guys are also saying it can be empowering.
Freeing.
And I think that's, yeah, I think that's interesting.
I mean, we know we're human beings. We know we could die at any moment, you know, and what is important is that Libby and I are a successful unit, but also that we are successful as individuals. If you can make a marriage as strong as possible, that doesn't mean making it hurricane proof. It just means, you know, sometimes realizing you need to evacuate.
That was so good, honey. That was killer. That was killer.
So good.
You guys love each other and we love you.
We really are going to need a lot more information down the road of what's happening in the Emily and Libby world. Can you please keep us posted forever?
I mean, if you follow both of us on Twitter.
We love you.
Yeah.
Oh, we will.
Thank you guys so much.
Yes. Welcome.
Thank you.
It was great.
Thank you. Oh my God.
These two ladies.
That was
That was intense. When we finished recording that interview, I literally walked right out and told Mary, I was like, you need to listen to this one as soon.
Yeah, no, I thought about a lot. I couldn't stop thinking about them for days, actually. Now here I am thinking about them again.
I know, just all that stuff about relationships. So good. I can't wait to see what they do, you know, the kids and stuff.
It's very exciting. I love our job. I love what we do. This is amazing. We just get to talk to wonderful people.
If only we got paid for this job, Jamie.
I know. I called it a job because it is a job, but we don't.
It is more than a job. It's a passion. It's a career.
It's a lifestyle.
Well, before we go, I just want to tell everybody, don't forget, we have a book out and you can vote for us on the Alternative Choice Awards nonfiction category. You go to the link in our IG bio and you can also get the book at all major retailers. It's audiobook and print, anything. and all that jazz. You can get the audiobook on Audible, Audible, Amazon, and iTunes. And if you get it, don't be afraid, gosh darn it, to review it on Amazon or Goodreads.
Always.
Please.
We'll take a good review.
Rate
we'll take
and a review. Good one.
And let's just keep this conversation going. You know, you can always join us on the social. We are everywhere you never wanted us to be.
It's true. We are.
We are Ovaries Talk on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. We are If These Ovaries Could Talk on YouTube, where you can see recordings of our live streams, which don't forget, we do these live streams on our Facebook page at 4 p.m. Eastern every Thursday. So you can always catch us there. And if
except
you miss
Thanksgiving,
it,
we won't be doing it Thanksgiving week. FYI,
not on Thanksgiving,
BT-dubs.
Because we're going to be all so busy on Thanksgiving. And also, please, you can support the podcast and you can join our community on patreon.com/ovariestalk. You're going to get a bunch of bonus content. You're going to get early episodes. And you're going to help us keep making this podcast so that we can keep doing what we love to do so much. And Robin is making a weird face at me. So I think that's it. Okay.
Thank you to our sponsors, Ember Wave, Sweaty Betty, and Storyworth. And a huge thank you to all our Patreons for helping us make the show possible. All of you all, thank you.
Thank you all. And yay, 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 election. Anyhow.
We won!
What?
Eggs.
All right. Ovaries!
Out!
Okay, what? Out, out.
Okay. All right, okay.
If these ovaries could talk, they would say, X ovaries out.